it's looking like flying fuel into Nome may be our only option at this point.
Early freeze-up blocks the last fuel barge to Nome. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, November 29th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a new program helps teachers better understand Alaska Native ways.
We've heard from students that they stop making relationships with the new teachers because they know they're not going to be there, you know, by Christmas, or they're not going to be there, you know, the next year.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, which has been providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
A U.S. Postal Service report calls for changes to Alaska's bypass mail program, saying it has evolved past its original purpose and seems to help commercial interests more than rural residents. Bypass mail employs private air carriers to move cargo to bush communities at subsidized rates. In the report released yesterday, the Postal Service's Inspector General suggests the state or federal government reimburse the Postal Service for tens of millions of dollars in program-related losses. It also suggests removing the Postal Service from the equation and ceding the program to the private sector. Speaking in Fairbanks yesterday, Senator Mark Begich said he was not surprised by the criticism.
They never tell you what you do well. They just tell you what they think. And then they limit their information, how they derive their result. So our task will be to look at that IG report, answer those questions as quickly as possible. But I think Alaskans know exactly the value of bypass mail. And, you know, I have no idea if IG has been to Alaska to visit a rural community where without the post office, the community will not survive, economically and otherwise.
Begich sits on the Homeland and Government Services Committee, which has jurisdiction over the Postal Service. He says the bypass mail program is intact in the current budget plan, despite a U.S. House bill calling for the state of Alaska to pay for it. Alaska's congressional delegation has railed against the House bill, noting that Postal Service is guaranteed by the Constitution. Senator Begich warned that Alaska will face defense cuts as Congress goes to work to shape over $1 trillion in budget reductions by January 2013. The automatic cuts are the result of the Congressional Supercommittee's failure to come up with an alternative plan by Thanksgiving. Begich says the Alaska delegation is worried about the military.
We know the budgets are going to be reduced. That is just a given. And so what we have to do is make sure that Alaska is not unfairly treated. And that's really the challenge here. But we're going to have to reduce the budget.
The Department of Defense has delayed several times the award of a $600 million operation and maintenance contract for the missile defense site at Fort Greely, but Begich says he's not concerned about that funding.
I feel very confident. We're on them every month to make sure. There's no budget delay. There's no other reason why. It's just the process a little more complex than they had anticipated. And a lot of questions from the contractors to make sure they're bidding on what they expect they're going to be doing, because they don't want to come back in this financial condition of the country to come back a year later and say, oops, we need more money.
Begich says Alaska's strategic location will help protect its infrastructure, noting major investments at Clear Air Station and Fort Greely as examples. Begich attended a deployment ceremony in Anchorage at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson today for 3,500 troops heading to Afghanistan. The impact of this fall's storm may last into next summer in Nome. The last fuel delivery of the season did not make it in due to the storm and a quick freeze-up. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story.
The Sitnisok Native Corporation ordered 1.6 million gallons of fuel in May, and the fuel was headed up to Nome on a Delta Western barge. The barge pulled fuel from tanks in Unalaska and Adak, but the massive storm delayed its progress northward. By the middle of this month, ice had formed in the Norton Sound, preventing the barge from reaching port. According to the Alaska Dispatch, the company sent aircraft looking for openings in the ice and searched for ice-capable tugboats and breakers, but none were available. Jason Evans, the Sitnasauk board chairman, says the company is disappointed and wants Delta Western to complete the deal.
We want the fuel we ordered back in May to be delivered to Nome at the cost that we agreed back then. So we're hoping that they'll honor their agreement and continue to provide the fuel that has always been ordered and has been waiting the delivery since May.
The fuel barge is now headed back to Cook Inlet. With the fast freeze-up, the shipping season is over, and Evans says fuel may have to be flown in.
It's looking like flying fuel into Nome may be our only option at this point, but we're exploring everything we can to determine if there's any excess fuel in the community already and what the exact need might be to get us through the winter. A couple of Delta Western employees did fly up to Nome to meet with myself, our president, and our fuel manager yesterday. So we're having ongoing discussions with them right now.
The barge order was split roughly into thirds between gas, diesel, and heating fuel. Evan says the delivery would have given a good surplus going into next summer. The company is now trying to figure out how much lower the demand in Nome may be. Evan says any shortage would be for gas and diesel.
One good thing is we do have the majority of our home heating fuel in Nome already. So we do feel pretty good about the quantities of home heating fuel in Nome already. But gasoline and diesel will most likely need to be flown into Nome.
And as for how flying fuel could affect the price, Evan says that is to be determined.
Flying fuel into Nome will affect the price, but we're not sure who will bear that price yet, if that's going to fall on the community. And that's what I hope, to protect the community in Nome by not having to let them bear the cost of this exactly. But it's really undetermined at this point how price may be affected.
Evan says Sitnasauk in the coming days will continue to seek a solution with Delta Western. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
9 Alaska Native and conservation groups have challenged a federal air permit granted by the Environmental Protection Agency for a second Shell oil drilling rig intended for Arctic waters. The groups last month appealed an air permit for the Discoverer and its support vessels. Environmental law firm Earth Justice on Monday appealed the EPA permit for the drilling vessel Kulluk. Shell hopes to use the vessels to drill in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas next summer. The group claim the drill ships could emit significant amounts of pollution, setting an unhealthy precedent in the Arctic. Shell spokesman Curtis Smith says that the company has made efforts to reduce emissions to the lowest possible levels. A successful appeal of air permits played a part of Shell's decision to cancel drilling for 2011. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaska Outlaw playing cards are back with a brand new deck.
Punches can be thrown, it gets very heated, but in the end, we narrow it down to the newest candidates.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
An abrupt change in the weather is forecast for mainland Alaska. Cold air that's hung over much of the state for the last 2 weeks is being displaced by much warmer airflow. National Weather Service meteorologist Bob Fisher says a classic Chinook pattern is setting up.
We're seeing a very rapid change in the upper air pattern as we get a ridge coming up northward out of the Gulf of Alaska and the Pacific. This is the proverbial Pineapple Express.
Fisher says warm, moist air will bring snow to southwest and south central Alaska and to the western interior, while near and above freezing temperatures and winds are forecast to the north and east, including the Alaska Range. Much warmer temperatures are expected as far north as the Brooks Range and the North Slope. Fisher says conditions will moderate late in the week, but a second Chinook is expected to push through this weekend. The U.S. Department of Education has awarded the Alaska Humanities Forum a big grant to expand its Educator Cross-Cultural Immersion Program. The program sends new teachers to villages to learn about bush life and Alaska Native culture before they start their jobs in rural districts. Dacia Eaton with member station KDLG has more.
A nearly $2 million grant from the U.S. Department of Education will be used to expand a program aimed at creating cultural competence in Alaskan teachers. Lori Evans-Deneen is the director of the Rose Urban Rural Exchange Program, which is administering the grant. She says the funds will target teachers headed for the Lower Kuskokwim and the Northwest Arctic Borough school districts this coming fall.
They will meet up for a cross-cultural orientation, then they will go out to very specific culture camps. So as the teacher then moves into their traditional in-service with their districts, they will have that network of support, if you will, to help get them through. In some cases, it's isolation, it's moving from a broad city into a small community where you're sort of under the microscope.
At the camps, teachers will learn about Alaska Native culture, language, and worldviews, subsistence, communication styles, and traditional ways of learning. After the camp, teachers will be paired with an experienced teacher mentor who will guide them as they begin the school year. The program is based on an exchange program that has taken urban Alaskan teachers out to rural areas to give them a better understanding of the growing number of rural and Alaska Native students who are migrating to cities and showing up in their classrooms. The aim of the new program for incoming rural teachers is to better prepare recruits for life in the bush, increasing teacher retention in rural districts. The average annual turnover rate among Alaska's 49 rural school districts is high. Turnover has hovered around 20% since 2000. Evans-Deneen says it's a real problem.
In some cases, the turnover in communities have been so dramatic that we've heard from students that they stop making relationships with the new teachers because they know they're not going to be there, you know, by Christmas, or they're not going to be there, you know, the next year. And if you can imagine the impact on students who don't have the bonds or the relationships with teachers that are very important in the learning process, that is a detriment to the student.
75% of the roughly 145 new teachers hired every year go to rural districts. Many of them are just out of school and come from urban settings in the lower 48. Not only are they beginning their profession, but most lack familiarity with bush life and Alaska Native culture. The transition can be stressful. Evans-Deneen says many quit after just a year or two.
We know that we can talk about our rural communities, we're off the road system and all of that, but until you've experienced it, you can't really understand what that means. So taking a teacher who's, you know, used to having all the commonalities of an urban center, and suddenly you're finding yourself in a community that has an AC store, and, you know, the next time you want to get anything, you have to get out by plane. The teachers are coming in totally unprepared in some ways for this.
Evans-Deneen says expanding the exchange program to include incoming rural teachers is sure to help. L.A. Piper is a teacher at Service High School in Anchorage. She participated in the Exchange for Urban Teachers, which is serving as a model for the program.
Anchorage is really isolated. It's almost like America in the terms of the world, right? We only think about ourselves. And Anchorage is kind of the same way in terms of Alaska. It gets really easy to forget about what life is like in different communities.
Piper, who usually teaches Shakespeare, sex ed, and yoga, visited Point Hope near Barrow for 10 days this past June. Although she'd been teaching in Alaska for years, she'd never spent time in the bush. As part of her exchange, she went on a seal hunt.
We're out on this crystal clear sea, and we're hunting for the seals. I'm freezing to death. I've got like four coats on or something like that. And so Henry, our guide, pulls up onto this ice floe, and he whips up this hot dog stuff, and we're having hot dogs out in the middle of the ocean at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'm like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime event.
Piper says once she got back to Anchorage, her Point Hope experience helped her to connect with her students from rural Alaska.
You know, just having that connection, like me showing them, you know, this is where I went and this is what I did. I've got kids now that are talking about, that aren't even from the North, but they're talking about, you know, their experiences in Ketchikan or their experiences in the interior.
Administrators with the Rose Urban Rural Exchange Program say the program for teachers headed to rural districts will start this August. The grant funds will train 60 teachers headed for the Lower Kuskokwim and the Northwest Arctic Borough school districts this coming fall. If the program's a success, it will be replicated in additional districts. The grant funding for the Educator Cross-Cultural Immersion Program totals $1.92 million, and the grant runs for 3 years. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Federal Communications Commission is about to launch a program to expand access to high-speed internet for more than 150,000 Alaskans who live in rural areas. But Alaska's governor and some of the state's telecom industry leaders doubt the program will solve the problem. And the program could come at the expense of the Universal Services Fund, which has had a big impact on Alaska. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The USF was created in 1996 during the last round of federal telecommunications reform. The fund subsidizes companies that provide telephone service to rural areas around the country. That's an expensive venture that requires subsidies that are funded through an elaborate system of tariffs and fees, including the $3.45 USF fee that we all see on our monthly telephone bill. All agree that it's also going to be expensive to provide broadband to rural areas, especially in Alaska. FCC spokesman Mark Whitfield says the agency's USF reforms would integrate the program into a new Connect America fund, which will provide up to $4.5 billion to expand broadband into rural areas nationwide.
It's important that we make the changes so the Universal Service Fund can do for broadband what it did for telephone service.
But Alaska Governor Sean Parnell and many leaders of the state's telecom industry say the Connect America reforms won't work here. Instead, they say they'll have the opposite effect.
The changes, in fact, could set the state back a bit as opposed to helping us advance towards broadband access for everybody.
That's Jim Kohler, an advisor to Parnell. He's also the State Department of Administration's project manager for telecommunications and broadband issues. Kohler says Parnell and telecom industry leaders in Alaska don't yet have all the details of the FCC plan that will be outlined in a 500-some page document to be released any day now. But most of what they've seen over the past couple of years during the plan's formulation worries them. They say the reforms will lead to big funding cuts for both basic voice and data services in rural areas. Kohler says the FCC's proposals have introduced uncertainty over whether the feds will continue to adequately support, through subsidies, the very expensive business of investing in the technology needed to provide broadband to rural and remote areas in Alaska. Jim Rowe, executive director of the Alaska Telephone Association, says the buzz that has preceded release of the reforms already has had a chilling effect on the state's telecom industry investment.
It's already happened. There's already a chill, because how is an entity going to think about borrowing money to build infrastructure? And you don't do this from this month to that month. This is planned ahead years. Let's see, we want to borrow money, but I don't know if we're going to have a revenue stream sufficient to be able to pay off our loan. Do we really want to make this investment now?
Mike Garrett, executive vice president of Alaska Power and Telephone, says his company probably will, in the short term, start cutting back investment in regular voice service that it provides to customers in 35 smaller Alaskan communities.
You're going to have the companies that do serve out in the bush areas make much less investment in the typical voice services. I mean, they're going to do with less.
Whitfield, the FCC spokesman, says if anything, the reforms will reassure investors because they're long overdue and badly needed to bring the nation's telecom regulations current.
So this basically phases that system out and is putting the industry on a firmer foundation going forward.
Whitfield says he expects the USF reforms to take effect sometime soon after the holidays. Rowe, with the Alaska Telephone Association, says he expects lawsuits will be filed soon thereafter to block all or part of the reforms. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation celebrates four decades of dependable financing and competitive interest rates for Alaskans. Find out more by asking your lender or real estate professional how Alaska Housing can assist you with buying a home. This message is sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Two groups that are opposed to the development of a coal mine across Cook Inlet from Anchorage are suing the state. The Trustees for Alaska filed the complaint earlier this month alleging that the State Department of Natural Resources failed to approve an application for water rights made by the groups while it granted water use permits to the coal development company. The Chewitna Citizens Coalition and Cook Inlet Keeper have sued DNR and its Commissioner Dan Sullivan, alleging that in 2 years, his department failed to process an application for in-stream flow rights to Middle Creek. The creek is within the Chewitna River watershed and is certain to be impacted by the mine development proposed by Pack Rim Coal. Valerie Brown is an attorney with the Trustees for Alaska.
Chewitna Citizens Coalition and Cook Inlet Keeper asked that DNR reserve a certain amount of water in Middle Creek, which would be mined through by Pack Rim. What they've asked is that DNR protect a certain amount of water in that stream to protect fish production. And the Alaska Constitution says the first person to ask for water and have that water appropriated has a right to it. And so once you have that water right and you have it, the fish are protected, then you can keep later people from taking that water if it would hurt the fish.
The lawsuit asks the court to require DNR to adjudicate the group's application in a timely manner. DNR works with the Department of Fish and Game to assure that temporary water use permits and water rights applications do not harm fish or fish habitat, according to Ed Fogles, DNR's deputy commissioner. Fogles says in-stream flow permit review is prioritized.
DNR currently has 338 in-stream flow applications that are pending before us. An in-stream flow application is typically very complex, and it takes a lot of data, many years of data for us to be able to adjudicate it. And so it takes us a long time and a lot of staff resources to do that. We work with the Department of Fish and Game to make sure that we're processing the most important in-stream flow applications first. And so we're just going through them as fast as we can.
Fogle says it's important to understand that because an in-stream flow application has been filed, it doesn't mean that DNR will stop all other water permitting activity on the water body while the in-stream flow application is being considered. Alaska Outlaw Playing Cards are back with an all-new deck of famous and infamous outlaws, rebels, and con men from Alaska's past. The new deck contains many of the old characters that have made the cards a popular gift item with tourists like Soapy Smith and Sarah Palin, but also has a little something for locals like a Joker card featuring Mattress Ranch guy Ted Sadler. KBBI's Aaron Selbig has more.
The first edition of Alaska Outlaw Playing Cards was released back in 2008, says Anchorage businessman and card creator Jason Hahn, and they quickly became a hit with summer tourists.
It captures a unique part of Alaska's history just in one, you know, small deck of cards. So a lot of people really enjoy them and take them back home to their families. A lot of people, they get people comment on the cards and how much they like them. So that's always fun to get that kind of feedback.
That first edition sold out in less than a week, says Hahn. A second edition of 10,000 decks was released last year and also sold out quickly. Hahn says deliberations among he and his partners can get pretty testy over which outlaws will be included in the new deck and which ones have to go.
Punches can be thrown. It gets very heated. But in the end, we narrow it down to the newest candidates.
New to the third edition deck are characters like former Senate candidate Joe Miller, the Ace of Clubs, Fairbanks militia leader and accused murder conspirator Schaefer Cox, he's the Jack of Diamonds, former Anchorage Talk Radio host and Tea Party leader Eddie Burke, the Two of Spades, and an old pipeline boom-era Anchorage bar called the Monkey Wharf?
I was sitting at a bar. Actually, I think I was doing my part-time bartending gig at that time, and a customer was telling about this bar where they had caged monkeys over the bar. And I was like, no way. That's, you know. Another guy at the bar was like, oh, yeah, totally. I've been there. I was there. So I did some research. Sure enough, there was a monkey wharf that had up behind the bar a huge cage that had monkeys, like a dozen monkeys, that would just hang out and play and drink and, I don't know, throw things at the customers. I don't know what they threw. But those are the days.
The Monkey Wharf, the Two of Clubs, represents some of the more lighthearted examples of Alaska outlaws, rebels, and cons. But others, like convicted serial killer Robert Hansen, the Ace of Hearts, represent darker chapters in Alaska's past.
There is that kind of underbelly of Alaska history. It is kind of disturbing. But there are guys that you just have to include, and Robert Hansen kind of fits that bill. You know, he made that first deck 3 years ago before there was ever talk of a movie. I think that, you know, he just was a little too famous. How could he not be in the Alaska Outlaw deck?
Three cards in the deck have Homer connections, although the town's namesake, mining promoter Homer Pennock, was left out of this edition. The Crab Vessel Time Bandit is included, however, as is the Hokahay Motorcycle Challenge, a 2010 race from Florida to Alaska that killed two riders and left many unanswered questions about rules and finances. One perennial card in the Alaska Outlaw deck is the Three of Hearts, Homer's famous Eagle Lady, Jean Keene.
I think what is interesting is everyone knows her as, you know, maybe the crazy lady down the spit that was feeding the eagles. But she had quite an interesting past. You know, she was a rodeo star. She hung out with some celebrities during that time. I think like even Roy Rogers she might have hung out with. Ripley's Believe It or Not did a little story on her. And then when it got out of hand, she officially became an outlaw because Homer banned eagle feeding. But they did make an exception for Jean Keene.
Alaska Outlaw playing cards are available online at alaskaoutlaws.com. As are a few other Alaska Outlaw branded items, including t-shirts, hoodies, and even Alaska Outlaw whiskey. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Ben Matheson in Nome, Dacia Eaton in Dillingham, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer, Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years. And by AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.